Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our last session of the day for the School of Successful Ranching. Before we get started, I want to go ahead and give a big thank you to all of our sponsors, and I hope that you take some time while you're here to stop by their expo booths and just say thank you, and they're the reason that we're able to do this, so they deserve a big thanks. Our sponsors are Capital Farm Credit, Cattlemen's Education Series, Corteva, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Positive Feeds, Rabo Agri-Finance, Stay Tough Fence and Manufacturing, and the Texas Beef Quality Assurance Program. Our next presentation is improving beef quality free, presented by Mark McCauley with Certified Angus Beef. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you. Well, I thought the question would be a little more controversial and would draw a big crowd, but apparently it wasn't controversial enough. Everybody knows the answer, but appreciate you being here. I know there's lots of different activities and things going on, so appreciate you being here, and appreciate you investing your time. I always say that that's the most important and most valuable thing that you have, and to invest it to be here and to learn. This is a fast-moving, fast-paced industry, and just trying to keep up sometimes is tough. So I compliment you on that. And, I heard the comment made or the phrase said this morning of get outside our fences. And I think I'm going to maybe do that just a little bit. That's kind of the perspective. I tend to spend most of my time today working over on the food service, retail, kind of that packing side. So maybe outside the fences of your operation and maybe share just a little bit of perspective of around this topic of beef quality. And this idea of what's we're a business that tends to love to talk about premiums. That's kind of how we're wired, right? We talk about how much premium is there involved. That obviously that premiums, it's about profitability, right? It's ultimately about the difference between the top line and the expense line and about profitability. So I want to try to explore that question just a little bit. Of what is that cost of beef quality as we look across our bigger industry. I always start with my bias, right? We all have some bias, so you got to understand my bias if you're going to hear what as I share some ideas. And I share this, as I said earlier, this just because this is kind of the vantage point that I see a lot of these things from today. For those of you that aren't familiar with Certified Angus Beef, a brand that was established back in 1978, where we were then and still today wholly owned by the American Angus Association. We are governed by a board of directors, of one of which is sitting in the crowd, which always makes me nervous. That always makes me nervous when I've got a board member sitting in the crowd. But no, we are governed by a board of directors that makes sure we're on mission, right? That we're on mission, and the mission for this brand is to increase the demand for registered Angus cattle. Now, we do that by focusing on the customer that's furthest away from that registered seed stock operation, and that's our food service and our retail partners that we network with. That today we work with over 17,000 different partners, both, I think, chefs, think restaurants, think grocery stores, think distributors, in over 50 countries now today. And so the brand has had a lot of success and a lot of growth over that 40, going on now 41 year history that it's been around. We have always been a not-for-profit, wholly owned subsidiary of the American Angus Association. Some people have heard of Certified Angus Beef and maybe didn't know how we were ever funded. The question was earlier, are you like the checkoff? We're a little bit like the checkoff. We assign a commission rate that the packers pay. Cattlemen always usually like to hear that the packers pay the all our revenue into Certified Angus Beef. It averages about 2 cents a pound. We take those dollars and then reinvest it with all of those partners to ultimately create more equity for the brand and protect equity, create pull-through demand for Angus cattle. And at the end of the year, the not-for-profit just means we try to spend everything we bring in and have those dollars wisely invested into brand marketing and brand building kind of efforts. We're on our 12th or 13th consecutive record year. This is our third year over 1 billion pounds of product sold. This year we'll price certify close to 6 million head of cattle into the Certified Angus Beef brand. So to give you some kind of sense, that's actually about 1 in 5. That's close to 20%. That's about 1 in 5 fed cattle in North America today get stamped into Certified Angus Beef.
That's probably bigger maybe than some think about it. We rarely have a week of cattle where we have less than 100,000 head certified into the program today that we're out and merchandising under that brand. So again, a lot of tremendous growth, and I'll share a little bit more of kind of what that's looked like. Maybe the statistic I'm most proud of up there is that $75 million figure and statistic, and that is every other year we survey our packers. So think the Tysons, the JBSs, the Nationals, and they report to us the direct grid premiums they paid specifically for certified Angus beef carcasses. So not choice select, not prime, but those premiums specifically over the choice base, and that number has continued to grow each and every year. And again, it's about that creating that pull through demand. So that's my bias, that's my perspective, that's my vantage point as we look at some of these things. So this topic of quality, I know we can tend to think of quality and probably should think of quality in a pretty holistic way. We think about freshness, we think about color, we think about wholesomeness, and all those things come into a bigger umbrella at times or a bigger definition of quality. For my comments in this topic, as we kind of think about it, I'm gonna be very quality is going to be synonymous with quality grade. Okay, so when I talk about increasing the quality of our product, I'm going to talk about increasing the quality grade of our products. So I'll use those two terms kind of interchangeably. And quality grade is determined, again, for some of you that had some meat science or are familiar with the grading system, this is where USDA third-party type graders are in and looking at the product for marbling and maturity. There's some other things that all kind of play into our grading system, but you can largely think of it as marbling. Okay, that's pretty. And as you increase marbling, you go from select to choice to prime, right? That quality grading system is how we, for years and years, have established value. And because it does a pretty good job of predicting eating satisfaction and consumer satisfaction of our product, right? Here's some data that I would share because sometimes I get in with cattlemen, we get into a little of this debate, does marbling really matter? I had a good select steak. And you can have a good select steak, and this data proves you can have it. It's the consistency by which you can have that really good eating experience. And again, the data's been pretty clear for years. As you increase the marbling, you go from select up to low choice, up to premium choice, as we'd call it in the trade, up to prime. This is percent of a consumer satisfaction, right? So as you increase the marbling in our product, you're going to improve your odds of a great eating experience, right? That's why businesses, that's why if you go over here to Del Frisco's or Capital Grill or Ruth's Chris or all these fine, great high-end steakhouses where you're going to pay an arm and a leg for it, right? They're not using select product. They're not using what I'll call commodity choice or low choice. They're using a certified Angus beef, a premium choice, and a prime product. And it's because of, if you're going to be known as a steakhouse, you better put a product on a plate that delivers a great eating experience, right? For us, again, we have a set of carcass specifications that cattle have to meet. The number one and hardest to hit is modest degree of marbling and higher. So that gives you some idea of kind of where certified Angus beef, and we do have a prime brand extension, fits. So that gives you some, again, idea of why are we even worried about marbling? Why are we even talking about this quality grade? Well, it relates obviously to consumer demand and long-term consumer demand for our product. I added this slide here, so it's not, for those of you who bought the book, this one's not in. I just added it because I've been getting this question a little bit of, is there such a thing as too much marbling? I think it's a great question. And I would have always just said nope. No, we're a long ways away from worrying about too much marbling, and I probably still think that, okay? But I did find some data, and I was having a discussion with meat scientist Travis O'Quinn, who's now at Kansas State, was at Texas Tech. That's when this research was done. And he actually, he threw me a paper and some research where they actually got up and looked at some Wagyu product that was over 20% intramuscular fat versus prime that's about 14%. And he said they actually started picking up some consumer pushback around flavor a little bit. Okay, so I think it's maybe a good question when we look at how much marbling do we need to put into this product. But I think for the most part, when we think about, you know, trying to produce more prime and premium choice, we're probably in pretty safe territory that we're not going to overproduce here. But it's interesting. It's something to talk about. So this is, there's probably a lot has been written around this idea, the improvement that this industry has made, that cattle producers, and I'll say this has been a very intentional focus that cattlemen have had to improve the end product quality of our product. And we've done it by focusing on genetics. We've been focusing on the management that ultimately influences marbling, okay, because that's really what this is. And so those bars represent the percent choice and prime. The blue bars there are prime. I mean, so look at this. We started back in the 90s. We went a long time in this business where we just made no progress, right? We ran along pretty flat. For years and years, we ran 55, 56% choice and prime. That's just kind of what we did, right? And then we started making some progress. And we've been making a lot of progress really since the middle 2000s on. And I would tell you, I get asked, what changed? And there's a number of different things that went on in here. And we did improve our grading practices. We started using cameras, vision grading more. And I would say that is part of this. We've done a more accurate job. I'd say we were probably making some improvement maybe back in this period of time. But the humans that were in the plant, if they were in that, the graders, if they thought they were in a 55% choice plant, well, they found 55% choice. So I think there was some of that going on. And I think as we've improved the technology and our grading technology and our plants, that's some of this. This is when we started making, you know, coming on and this improving. But we haven't really changed much in grading technology ever since. Okay, I think it's just allowed these cattle to be graded more accurately. I'd say this is largely genetics, okay? Largely genetics, genetics that we've been specifically bred for, selected for marbling, and not just one generation, but multiple generations. As we've rebuilt the cow herd coming out of the drought, those cattle we've got the newest genetics in our cow herd that we've probably ever had, the youngest genetics, I should say. So I'd say this is very intentional. This shouldn't be a surprise that we've made this kind of progress. I throw up carcass weight. That's what that red dotted line is up there, because I also think it's interesting. Sometimes we think, well, maybe it's just we're just feeding these cattle longer. We're just making them heavier so they grade better. And there's some truth to some of that, but we've been making cattle heavier for a long time, pretty consistently, 5 to 6 pounds of more carcass weight each and every year. And we were making them heavier for a long time in through here where we weren't improving the quality. We were just making them bigger. And now we're making them bigger. Actually, the last few years, we finally flattened that thing off just a little bit. And we're still making them heavier. So it's not just a function of feeding them bigger, feeding them heavier, feeding them fatter. Okay? It's truly the cattle have more genetic ability to grade, and they've been allowed to express that. That's been a good thing. So it's getting late in the afternoon. I'm throwing graphs and data at you, but sometimes those percentages, we look at those percentages, and what I think gets lost at times in the percentages is how much more actual meat we've put out into the marketplace. And I just compared the year of 2010 to 2018 and what those numbers represent. So that's weekly production. So think about, this is carcass weight, million pounds of carcass weight a week that we produce coming out of our, as an industry. Okay, this isn't certified Angus beef. This is as a beef industry. In 2000, we were producing 13 million pounds of prime carcasses a week. Last year, we produced 33 million, 20 million pounds more and 158% more prime carcasses in 8 years, guys. That's amazing, right? That is pretty amazing. So this has been a function of more cattle grading and then also just more cattle, right? We've increased cattle numbers, so kind of a perfect storm here. From our standpoint, and again, we operate in this prime space. We also, premium choice is where the bulk of the certified Angus beef product is and what we brand. You know, we went from a 51 million pounds of carcass weight production a week. We've added almost close to double that, really, okay? You know, just in choice, we've put 50 million pounds more of total choice out in the marketplace. Where does it come from? right? What's shifted? Well, it's right here. It's select. We're producing 50 million pounds a week less, almost 40% less select beef a week because of this very intentional shift and improvement in quality grade. That's a pretty monumental shift in our business. So when you think about customer bases out there, retail, food service customer bases that are based on either they're a select customer or a choice customer or a prime customer, there's been a lot of shifting going on out there in the marketplace because we've shifted the product mix that we've produced in a pretty drastic way. Okay, this shows that maybe just a little more easier to see, and it's graphically here. A couple of years ago, the number of percent of all of total fed cattle, I guess. The lines between the amount of select cattle stamped and certified Angus beef stamped cattle actually intersected here a couple of years ago. Whereas an industry, we used to be up here around 33% select. Last year, we were under 18%. Okay, so a huge, huge shift in our overall marketplace, which is, again, I think about just putting a much better, higher quality product out in our marketplace. Cattlemen have responded in a big, big way. So that's all about the production side. That's really about the pounds we put out there. I think when we start getting into this demand side of things, we need to pay attention to the spreads. And I think that when we talk about the cutout spreads, you hear about the choice select spread. So just to make sure we're all thinking about that, the cutout is simply, you know, think about every week, every day, the packer is selling boxed beef, right? They're selling boxes of strip loins and ground beef and trimmings and inside rounds and all these cuts. And they report the prices of those cuts through mandatory price reporting. Okay, and there's USDA in the end takes all of that aggregate data and they roll it all up and they ultimately put it back on and into a carcass value basis, and they call that the cutout. Right, that's really all it is. It's kind of it's the wholesale value of the pieces and parts of that carcass. So then they do that by quality grade. Okay, and so when you look at the difference in the cutout values between grades, that's what we call those the spreads. And that's when you start selling fed cattle on a grid. These spreads are what dictate an awful lot of your premiums and your discounts. Okay, so the choice select spread is in last year we averaged a little over $10 or $10.60. That's just the difference between the choice cutout and the select cutout. CAB, and again, to give you an idea of the premium choice side of things, we traded at an average of about $8.80. This is on a per hundredweight of carcass weight. So take it times 9, or 900-pound carcass, and give you some idea of the value per head. Okay, the big change last year was this prime premium. Okay, that prime premium was just under $3. That number has changed pretty drastically over the years, and I'll show you what that kind of looks like here historically. This red bar, these are prime to choice premiums. So back here in 2012, we were up over a $40 prime to choice spread. Okay, that number, as I said, has come down. Now it's coming back up. Okay, but it has definitely compressed a little bit. The choice select spread it's actually stayed pretty resilient given the amount much more choice meat that we've put out on the marketplace. But when I put this up next to it, we've increased the amount of choice and prime by 26% in these years, and the spreads, again, they've tapered off. Last year, we definitely saw some compression. We're keeping an eye on that because I think that's a really good indicator of how much more prime the marketplace wants. Okay, I'll share some thoughts on that kind of as we move forward. This gives you an idea from just a pure certified Angus beef standpoint. This black line is our annual sales. So I told you last year we were at about over 1.2 billion pounds. 10 years ago, we were half that, about 600 million pounds. So the program has really doubled in the last 10 years. And the trend of our spreads, so this is our CAB over choice cutout spreads, again, they were awfully high here a few years ago. Okay, they were up here up over $14. They have come off a little bit. But when you think about how much more product has come out there, been in the marketplace, we've been actually pretty impressed that these spreads have stayed as strong as they have. And we think, again, a good, strong indication of demand that's out there for premium products. So that's an awful lot about the production side of things. The question that we wanted to, that I posed to begin with is, what's the cost of that? Okay, that's kind of what the product's worth, but what is the cost of that at the feed yard and back at the ranch? And I don't have nearly as much data to show you on that because I don't think we know as well. And I'd say a challenge to our industry is we probably need to better understand some of these things, okay? But what I can share with you is, I think some, from a feeding perspective standpoint, this was an analysis we did with Five Rivers, and we've done similar analysis with other feeders in the past. But this one was some pretty sizable data that they ran and looked at. Basically, they took the details. We're thinking about, these are yearling steers in their feed yard, and we sorted them to make sure we were comparing apples to apples. Okay, we took the natural cattle out, things like that. And basically took their high grading cattle. Okay, they took all of their pens of high grading cattle and they compared it to their pens of low grading cattle. So their high grading cattle were 90% choice, 45% or choice and prime, 45% CAB. And then they compared them to all their lots of what they called low grading cattle. They averaged 60% choice, 13% CAB. And what were the differences in them? Well, the high-grading cattle were heavier, and that's probably no surprise, typically. But what was, when we got into the data, the cattle really, from an average daily gain or performance standpoint, I mean, numerically, they're a little different. Statistically, they weren't any different. Their feed-to-gain or feed efficiency was the same, and their cost-to-gain was the same. Numerically, it was a little lower for the high-grading cattle, but that wasn't statistically different either. So I guess the point of all of this, and I think what it underpins, is what a lot of cattle feeders realize, is that there's not a need to sacrifice performance. There's not a need to sacrifice efficiency to go after quality. Now, I think we need to do maybe a better job at times of managing these cattle to their right endpoint. I think we overfeed some cattle and probably give up some efficiency going after some of these high-grading cattle. And I think that's our challenge moving forward, is to get these high-grading cattle, more primes, more CABs, more premium choice cattle, and at the same time take some of the waste fat off of them. And we can do that, right? We can do that. We can select cattle that have more marbling and less back fat. We've got the tools and the genetic prediction tools to be able to help us bend that curve a little bit. I think that's our challenge a bit moving forward. I think the bigger question, and I would tell you the question we definitely need to understand better, is around the maternal side of things. And this was a review I did for the Beef Improvement Federation meetings last summer, as I went out and I did a lit review of basically all the data that I could find out there that looked at the genetic correlation of marbling and any other trait that I would call significant to maternal function, okay, as best we can. So scrotal circumference as a prediction of puberty or fertility, age of puberty, age of first calving, birth weight, dystocia, all these, you can read the list. Basically went out there and found everything that was in the literature that looked at the correlation between marbling and these other traits. And what I found was there was not one paper, not one research study out there that showed an antagonism, right, to where if you select for marbling, make marbling higher, you're gonna pull down fertility, you're gonna increase calving difficulties. Okay, the only big correlation really that's up there is in the data is milk. As you increase marbling, you tend to increase milk. Okay, so you gotta pay attention to that if too much milk is an issue. But I think it paints a really positive outlook for our ability to maintain and improve maternal function of our cows, and at the same time improve the end product quality and the eating satisfaction of our end product. So I think that's a good story. You know, not to say if there are some antagonisms. I mean, birth weight and yearling weight are genetically correlated too. Naturally, when you select for yearling weight, you also select for birth weight. But we've got the tools today to improve yearling weight and decrease birth weight at the same time. So it's not that we couldn't even overcome some of these with the right genetic tools, but just naturally, we're not really fighting any sort of real issue out here. So I think that's a really positive thing for our beef industry moving forward, and I think speaks to maybe this whole maternal cost side of quality. I would argue it's maybe a free trait out there as we look at it from a maternal standpoint. So bigger picture and looking down the road, here's some things I'll share with you, some things that we're seeing from our side of things of of why we're still pretty optimistic and pretty bullish around what the demand for more, because I get this question a lot, have we kind of hit the ceiling? Do we really need to produce more quality? Is this going to go the other way? And you would expect me to say this, right? But from where we sit, we don't see anything up there that's suggesting we're going to go the other way and we're going to produce a lower quality product and we're going to see this thing head back down. We're going to go back to producing 2 and 3% prime. The marketplace has adjusted. It's adjusting right now, and I think it's adjusted in a pretty big way. Over the last few years, if you look out across the retail grocery space, look at the changes that Costco has done. Look at the changes of Walmart, okay? Now, we don't work with either one of those two. Costco is one of the biggest, if not the biggest seller of USDA prime product today, have been for a couple years. Walmart is out there and has been growing and promoting an upper two-thirds choice, an Angus program, a premium choice program. They're continuing to grow their commitment to that. We've got our continued growth in our retail customers, our grocery customers that we work with. And I made this point, big supplies that are allowing customer access. The fact that there's more, the fact that we produce 10% prime in the marketplace today, we've got folks owning restaurants that are now serving prime or having grocery stores that are serving prime. And now consumers that are eating prime that never had access to it before. Maybe they did when they went to Del Frisco's or Capital Grill, but not every day. And not that maybe even every day. Not even being able to buy it at the grocery store or Costco and take it home. And guess what? They like it. It's pretty good, right? That product is pretty good. And so these big supplies, I would tell you, have really allowed some of these customers to focus on it more and grow that business. One of the biggest growth areas in certified Angus beef from a strategic standpoint is the growth of certified Angus beef brand Prime. We've got a tremendous upside and growth to that. This is a little example that we just pulled together. This was a grocery chain out in Boston. Okay, one grocery chain. They've got 85 stores. They decided, we talked them into running one item. They're a certified Angus beef grocery store. When we started working with them a few years ago, they were largely select and select and choice. And then they got rid of their choice and put select and certified Angus beef. They just got rid of their select. Now they're certified Angus beef and certified Angus beef brand prime. They've just been shifting as the product has become more available. So they ran CAB prime top sirloins in their ad 2 weeks in a row. Okay? It wasn't maybe 2 weeks in a row. It was two weekly ads. I think they ran it 1 week, skipped a week, and ran the next week. When you do the math on that, they sold 430,000 pounds of CAB Prime top sirloins in those two ads, okay? When you work backwards, how many cattle did it take to fill those two ads? 16,500 CAB Prime carcasses to just fill that ad. That was 10 semi-loads of meat for that one ad. We talk in our retail strategy and growing our retail business, it's about getting the ad. Depends on the retailer, anywhere from 50 to 70% of their business will be done through their ads, okay? When you've got product availability out there, they'll get aggressive and put it in the ad, and they can go out and procure the product and not move the whole market, and that's exactly what this example shows. So it just kind of, again, it's one retailer, one item, 2 weeks, needed over 16,000 head to fill that order. So kind of a neat deal. Other things that we think are really underpinning and supporting this idea that we're going to continue to want more quality is ground beef. And that's something that maybe we wouldn't have ever thought about 10, 15, 20 years ago. We would say, ground beef's ground beef's ground beef, right? Nobody's going to pay more for a certain kind of ground beef than others. Guess what? That's a little different today. It's a little different today. The premium burger chains, the Five Guys and all of the great burger chains that are out there have elevated ground beef. You go into, I keep saying Del Frisco's. I can go to Del Frisco's and have a burger for lunch. I'm probably going to pay like $25 for it or something, okay? But the burger thing has been premiumized. This is a package that it's one percenter. It's a little hard to see. It's a company out east that makes this. This is a certified Angus beef brand Prime case-ready ground beef patty. I throw that one up just because I think it's funny. USDA Prime, wet aged. Okay, most if you've been around the meat business, Jane, most all beef, Mary Lou, is wet aged. That's not a big claim, but they've thrown it here in this, and so I think it's just kind of funny. But the whole point is there's prime and premium choice. This has been a huge growth area for us. Don't think of ground beef as ground beef anymore, and don't think of it as grade neutral, because there's absolutely value being created for premium end products for hamburger. Okay. Historically, I'll say a third point here is historically we've tended to think of the value of marbling is in the middle meats. It's in the steak item. So by middle meats we think the ribeye and the strip loin, or the loin in general. Those are the middle meats, the steak items. Because everything else, what happens? We grind it, or we throw it in a crock pot if it's a chuck roast, right? That's kind of historically how we've done this. Well, guess what? Your average consumer wants steaks. They don't. Now, Instapot's changing this a little bit. We're having more folks that are going back to understanding what a crock pot is and slow cooking and things. But for the most part, we have consumers that want more steak items, more grilling items. And these numbers, so this represents the choice select spread, or the value of a choice rib over select. Last year it traded at about 12% over select. The choice loin traded at about 10% over a select loin. This is CAB. So CAB ribs traded at about 5% over and about 6% over for the loin over choice now. Okay, so you can add those two together if you want to look at CAB over select. But the choice select spread, we don't see much spread on the middle meats, the rounds, the briskets, the thin meats, the chuck. We do on certified Angus beef, okay? And it's and this is where we're seeing value being created on the branded programs above choice on products beyond just the middle meats. The value of the marbling for the round cuts. The value, and this used to be zero. We used to not be able to really create much premium or overage to a CAB inside round to a commodity choice inside round. That's not the case today. We're starting to see some growth in the spread there, which is contributing to the overall value and spread of that whole carcass. Brisket, you guys get this. I'm in Texas, but this surprises some people. Okay, guess what the number one CAB prime subprimal that we sold last year was from a volume standpoint? Briskets. CAB Prime briskets. Okay, it's number three this year. We got the rib and the loin have caught up. But that's amazing, okay? And that's a huge, huge shift in the business. And again, I only share all this is because I think this is what the trend is. This is what supports this thing long term, that I believe we're not going backwards. We're going to continue down this path. I don't think it's any surprise when we look at our global business in particular, when we look at Asia, the Pacific Rim, the preference for them because of the products that they have and the cooking styles that they utilize, they want marbling. They want high quality products. They want high quality chuck rolls and plates and things like that. So this global demand for these highly marbled products is a pretty big driver, I think, long term. So again, I guess kind of in some summary points, I think this quality this improvement of quality that we've put out there has translated into better demand. I think it's just hard to argue that the fact that we're trading cattle at $1.25, $1.28, whatever we're going to trade them for this week, the reason we're trading fat cattle at that price is because we've produced a higher quality product out there. We're selling more pounds of that carcass, or more pounds of our cattle supply are bringing more dollars back into the packer. I believe the cutout drives the live cattle price for the most part, and this demand and this market of where it is today is because I believe we've put a much higher quality product out there today. This grading improvement I think has been very intentional, and I compliment cattlemen for paying attention to it, responding to the market signals, using the tools that are out there and available. I mentioned this, I think, given the amount of prime and premium choice product that has been out in the marketplace, to me these spreads have still, they're out there and they're have been still pretty robust. And I believe in particular of the prime one that got pretty soft last year, we're seeing that rebound. I think it's $12 last week, the prime over choice spread. I think, as I commented, a lot of things I think that are supporting this long term. And ultimately getting at this question, in my opinion, and from what I find in the data and what I talk to cattlemen, I think we've got a really, really exciting opportunity in front of us in that we can make our product better without incurring additional costs, okay? There's not a production drain on the cows. There's not a production drain in our finished cattle, okay, to make this higher quality product, which is puts us in a pretty incredible scenario. I've long said that the unsung hero of the Certified Angus Beef brand story is the Angus cow, because she's a pretty good cow, and we've been able to also have a breed that has typically more marbling, and so we've been able to build a brand around that. I get asked sometimes about why does Berkshire pork never work? Why didn't that thing really take off? Because if any of you guys ever seen a Berkshire pork chop, I mean, there's a lot of marbling in it. Okay, the problem is the Berkshire sow is not very good. Okay, she's inefficient, small litters, slow growing. There's so much production drag and cost on that product that it's never been hard to get that thing commercially viable. And so I think that's in large part why we've seen maybe some of the growth and success that we've had. I maybe leave you with this idea or this thought, and I thought it's been said a couple times already, and I think Donald Brown is the originator of the quote, and this idea that you don't have to change, you just have to accept that the others you're going to compete with are going to change. Okay, I think that this is saying it just a little bit different way. I think thinking about what the expectations of our product today, and I'm saying our product, I think our expectations of our consumer of our product has changed. The expectations of the feed yard, of your feeder cattle, have changed. The expectations of your bull buyers, if you're in the seed stock business, have changed. Okay, the expectations have gone higher. Driving around the Midwest, you still see some of these signs. I don't know if you see any of them down here yet at all. And I remember them as a kid, okay? So I'm, I don't know, what am I, 48, something like that. So whatever, 25 years or 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whenever I was driving around, every once in a while we'd go on something that remotely looked like a vacation, not really. But I remember seeing those signs and getting excited, thinking, oh, man, they have color TV, right? They have air conditioning. How many of you checked into your hotel if you're staying here and were surprised that you had a color TV, right? Or air conditioning, maybe not all that important here, but this time of year. But my point is, and you guys get the point, I just think that sometimes we make sure we don't get our assumptions stuck in something 10 to 15 years ago. If you're producing cattle that are 60% choice and prime, and you go, well, yeah, those are pretty good. No, they were average 10, 15 years ago. They're not today. And so we just need to make sure we keep up and understand that better product we've put out in front of the consumer that they like and have responded by paying more for. Anybody ever, man, it's always a trick talking to cattlemen because you guys don't go to the grocery store and buy beef, do you? You go to the freezer, right? But go to the grocery store sometime and walk around the beef case. This stuff's expensive. Okay, the consumer's spending a lot for it, but it's about price and value, and we've put a great value in front of them, and I think that's a pretty cool deal. So, if you have any interest, this is how you can. If you have interest in following us on the cattle side of things, we do have a team that focuses on working with cattlemen and producing some resources out there. If you want to follow along with us or communicate, get in touch with us in any way, shape, or form, that's how you can do it. So, I didn't pay any attention to what time it is. So I appreciate you guys being here. I'd be happy to answer any questions or talk about anything that you guys would like to talk about if there's some burning questions.
Is the weight limit on CA medium stay the same?
Oh, good question. So the hot carcass weight limit or specification for certified Angus beef is 1,050 or less. A handful of years ago, we did move that up. It was 1,000 pounds or less, and just with the trends in the industry, we adjusted that up to 1,050. I don't see anything that's not a discussion we're having right now that there's anything that suggests that it needs to go higher. I mean, if anything, our food service partners would say, bring it back down a little bit. It's an area where I think we're looking at not so much a carcass weight spec, but how to just, are there ways that we can, and we talk to the packers, ways to get them to sort the product differently and get more consistency of the subprimal weight in the boxes and things like that. So, yep. Oh yeah, no, but we hear it. Yes, we hear that a lot, and that's the one cut that they want to typically complain about. They also like the heavy rib or the heavy tenderloins because they yield better, and they like the heavy top sirloins the way we're fabricating them now. So I tend to have a little biology discussion with some of these guys. It's like we can't build one sub muscle bigger and bring the other one down. What we tend to work with on these heavier ribeyes, and where what we think the solution is let's get all those heavier ribeyes fabricated together, and then there's some things we can do with them. We can take that spinalis, that ribeye cap off, make a fillet of ribeye, further fabricate those muscles to make them better fit the end user from a portion size standpoint, as opposed, as I always tell the chefs, you can't pay enough for those lighter weight ribeyes to make the cap to send a strong enough signal back to the production to make cattle smaller. So let's just get out a knife and let's get creative and figure out how we do it that way. But you bet, it is definitely the number one complaint that we don't get it as much anymore. 5 years ago, that was more frequent. I think folks have just kind of gotten used to some of these cuts are bigger. Yeah. Yeah. We started doing it even with strip loins, which I know is a little sacrilegious to some. First time you do it, it's hard to take that knife and go the other way down a strip loin. But, now you can put out a really nice thick steak, or as the chefs say, one with height. It's thickness. But anyhow, and produce a better, it's just getting a little bit creative with the knife, you bet. Anything else? Other questions? Yeah, we went from the bone-in, the true cowboy, which was a bone-in ribeye that had the little bone, and now it's the tomahawk, and it's the full big bone out. Yeah, that thing is, so much of food service, and especially in the fine dining, is theater, and the wow factor that when you bring that big old, 36-ounce tomahawk steak out to the table and you parade it through the restaurant, and show that big thing off. Yeah, it's really a popular thing. We've started working with even like short ribs and making them like an ossobuco with the bones sticking up and Frenching that and showing folks how they can, again, it's funny, for years we were going for more, boneless, take all the bone away. It feels like we're kind of going the other way. Bone is, these guys, especially at food service, they want the bone in it a little bit now, so. I've always been told I'm supposed to wait 7 seconds. It always feels like an eternity when you're up here. So, all right. Well, sure appreciate you guys being here. Good luck to you for the rest of the convention. And again, always holler at us if you ever have any questions, comments, concerns whatsoever. Thanks.